The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
The sound of a Hammond B3, one of my favorites. Now, it used to be that the early software versions, I mean, Hammond B3s are absolutely fabulous instruments, but of course, they weigh about 400 pounds, have lots of tubes in them, sometimes difficult to maintain, but there's nothing like the original. But I have to tell you, the synthesized software organs, I have a number of them, they've come a long way now, so I can actually, you know, play Hammond organ at home, and it's not exactly the same, but it's not so bad. And you don't need to make space for a 400-pound behemoth along with the 300-pound Leslie speaker. But, boy, it's nice if you can have both of them, right? I know Scott out in Jacksonville, a friend of mine out there, he has a great Hammond setup. Man, there's just nothing better. But still, I only have a little room for that. All right, 770-5633 to join in. This is a... interesting story here. Ashland man indicted on several charges. You heard Bill talk about it in the news a little bit ago. Bill London. Yesterday, the Jackson County Grand Jury indicted 34-year-old James David Lee Hergett, a 34-year-old Ashland resident. Is that like a Maryland resident, a Maryland man? Anyway, on the following charges: first-degree kidnapping, second-degree kidnapping, coercion with a firearm, unlawful use of a weapon, menacing domestic violence, attempted assault second-degree, harassment, third-degree sex abuse, and first-degree sex abuse. So this guy was is accused of being a one-man dirtbag crime spree in Ashland. These indictments stemmed from a couple of incidents. April 12th. So in other words, last Saturday, at just before 11 o'clock in the morning, Hergett was reported to have vandalized property in the downtown area. And then he was fleeing from that vandalism. Then he confronted and assaulted a bunch of people. He left and ran away upon police officers arriving from Ashland. And then officers attempted to contact Hergett. He fled on foot. While doing so, he tried to gain entry into another house, leading to yet another assault against the occupant of that house. And then when officers contacted Hergett again, he assaulted two police officers before being subdued with a taser. Yep, the only thing that stopped the one-man crime spree was...
No!
Yeah, that's the one. However... here's the story that makes my eyes glaze over. And you ever watch those Hitler movie video in which people then take it and put their own stuff into it when Hitler, you know, he's listening to things going bad. This is some Hitler movie, right? And they make this movie about it. Everybody watches him on YouTube, and then people put their own words to it, right? To the German as he goes off on a tirade. And his hands start shaking, and then he takes off his glasses, and then he starts yelling at all the Nazis. Well, I feel like him when I see what happened in the lead-up to this alleged dirtbag being arrested. A previous incident. See, this is the part that makes this one-man crime spree a little more than irritating, right? And I'm shaking my hands here. A previous incident here was reported to the Ashland Police Department April 8th of 2025. So 4 days prior, in which the same alleged dirtbag Hergett is alleged to have held a man captive for 2 days while assaulting him and menacing him with firearms. Officers were unable to act on this complaint immediately due to concerns that forcing contact with the suspect would unnecessarily endanger the neighboring community, given the known presence of multiple firearms. The sex abuse charges stem from that April 8th incident. So they were afraid to confront him April 8th. And then more mayhem ensued 3-4 days later because you were concerned about the safety of the community. The safety of the community was threatened because Ashland police appeared to have been ordered to not do anything. I'm not thinking this is something that came from the officers. I can't help but think that this is something that the chief did. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to describe this. This is reminding me of years ago when they had a deer problem in Ashland, remember? And they had the deer summit, and they had the mayor of Ashland, and someone's writing to the mayor in Ashland and said, "Shoot the deer, you damn pansy." I think he used stronger words than that. But, you know, I remember a better time in which you'd have police officers roll up and... and if the guy had firearms, if there was a danger to the community, you evacuate around the community and you shoot the bastard in the head when you get the chance. Because obviously this was someone who deserved to get a bullet someplace, given the mayhem and the injuries and the danger to the community that he reportedly posed. Now, I wasn't there. I get it. I'm not the police officer. I understand there may be rules. I get it, but something's really wrong here on this one. And if I were an Ashland resident, I would be calling up the police chief and saying, "Hey, I'd like a refund on my police chief fees or my, you know, police officer fees." I have a feeling that the decision to not do anything when there's the opportunity to do something with him at that time most likely came from higher ups within the Ashland police. I may be wrong about that. Maybe it's just officer discretion. But I cannot imagine officers seeing a guy who once again kidnapped a guy, kept him there, whacked him around for 2 days, and then causes all sorts of other mayhem. You know, this is, once again, kind of going down to that order of love thing that I was talking about. What is the... Well, I don't know. Maybe Ashland... Maybe it was in such a weird area that they couldn't have done anything. The guy supposedly had a lot of fire. And they did get a lot of firearms from this alleged loser. Okay? So they got a search warrant on Iowa Street, and they seized several firearms. And yet, 4 days he ran around, potentially causing problems. And Ashland, you pay lots of taxes. Apparently, you don't love your people that much. Because we were more concerned about, preserving the life and limb of alleged dirtbag. All right. Like I said, that's my little mini, like, just like on YouTube, you know, I take off my glasses and... what are you doing? All right. Hi, good morning, KMED. This is Bill. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. It's Super Dave off in Iona, Idaho.
Dave, how are you doing in Idaho? Good to hear from you.
Not too bad. Hey, I got a phrase I've developed for Trump and his method since he has been reelected. I call it political blitzkrieg. It's lightning war on a political sense. He's throwing bombs everywhere. And because he knows he's got a very limited time to get things done.
My concern, though, is that sometimes the political blitzkrieg, though, can be reversed very quickly through other means. And I think it's important to dot I's, cross T's while you're doing it, though.
I can get behind that, too.
Yeah.
So I had another thing here, and it kind of goes with that. Yesterday, I stopped in my local Dairy Queen, and I got a nice s'mores blizzard. As it was snowing out here. And they gave me back my change, and it had two pennies in it. One was a new penny, bright and shiny, copper look. And the other one was a roadkill penny. And all that copper had pretty much been scraped off the thing. And it reminded me of Rome. You know, when Rome was first started, it was a rich country. Coins were all gold. And after 250 years, as they were going down the toilet, all those coins are just barely covered with gold. And that penny is the perfect reminder of where we are today.
It always starts with the money, doesn't it, Super Dave?
It does.
Mm-hmm. Great hearing from you. Thank you for the take on that. 770-5633. Let me grab another call here before news. Maybe two more calls. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's David.
Hi, David.
Hey, I'm wondering what the situation would be, or the liability situation, if the man had in Ashland had hurt someone after the 8th when the police decided not to arrest him. Because I feel like if he'd had a second victim, I mean, luckily he only vandalized some businesses, but if he'd had another victim in that time period, I feel like it would be a massive civil liability situation for Ashland for leaving a known, you know, violent offender sitting there for all those days. I'm really curious if you could get some more insight into that story. I think it'd be worthwhile to take into
Yeah, but, you know, and I'm just taking this from their release. This is what they're telling, what they're actually putting out right now. And it just astounds me that he was there on the 8th, and supposedly they were around there, and they decided to do nothing because of the possibility of him getting sporty. And I don't know. And look, and a bunch of other people ended up, you know, getting assaulted and getting hurt, you know, after the fact here. Hopefully not seriously. We don't know what the level of this is. But, you know, once again, apparently they're not loving us enough at this point.
Well, yeah, I think I feel like that makes...
What was that now, David? I missed you.
Another minute.
What's that now?
I said, if he's that dangerous, how could they let him sit there for even an extra minute? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. It's just, I mean, this is the sort of thing in which you surround the place and you stay around the place and he doesn't get the opportunity to go out. You just, sometimes you have to be patient, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, these cops got all kinds of gear. I mean, you get pulled over, you get cops behind you nowadays. I'm surprised they couldn't handle something like that, you know?
Yeah. Now, I don't know what the procedures are. Maybe that was the proper procedure according to the way things are set up there. But and maybe this was something in which the chief just said, hey, just let him go. We'll eventually catch up to him. But I don't know. You know, once you've already had someone threatening and menacing with a firearm and keeping someone locked up in the place for 2 days, you're talking about serious bad dude, you know? Seriously.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like some drugs, probably. I mean, just guessing, but...
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, we're just, you know, there's a lot of guessing about this one. But even what I'm seeing with this, I'm not particularly enamored of the approach, but that's just me. Okay? No. All right. Appreciate the call. I'll grab one more, and then we'll get the news. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
Is this me?
It is you.
Oh, I didn't hear the noise.
That's all right, but you're on now. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill. It's Carol Ann the Applegate.
Hi, Carol Ann.
So when you mentioned the deer, it made me think it's a little different, but stick with me for a minute.
Okay.
When they had that cougar in Ashland up in the tree, and they wouldn't shoot the cougar because of the people going, oh, the poor cougar. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm thinking maybe there are too many drugs in their water or something, and the police are drinking them too, because that the whole thinking process is so twisted there. You know, don't take care of this guy because of some twisted process of thinking you couldn't just get a SWAT team out there, like you say, and deal with it.
Yeah, I'm just astounded. Now, I can appreciate...
Don't do anything with the cougar in the tree that they could have just shot with an anesthetic, an arrow of, you know, put him to sleep and taken care of him.
Now, I appreciate the fact that they're looking out for the safety of the community, but the greater community would appear to arguably have been under attack, given the fact that he wasn't taken in when he first came to the attention of authorities there at Ashland. That's the issue, really. Isn't that it?
It is. Ashland is, I actually, years and years ago, I had dealing with the Ashland police in a domestic situation with a grandchild of mine that I was trying to liberate from a situation. And the Ashland police knew the person, and so they just kind of, oh, no, this is one of the princes of Ashland. We're not going there. So it's a whole nother territory there.
All right. Well, hopefully nobody got seriously hurt in the second crime wave from alleged dirtbag, but
right.
Still, if I were an Ashland resident, I would have an interesting talk with the city council and the police chief about this, and maybe there's more to this story than can be let out in a press release. I'm willing to to acknowledge that that could be, you know, maybe it is that maybe this guy over on Iowa Street where he was living, is there, maybe there's a, you know, a school playground right next to it and the kids are playing and this and that. I could understand some extension.
They need to tell people, don't they, to salvage their reputation if there is something.
Yeah.
But before you let me go, I just want to add to the many, many bouquets of kudo flowers you get. And I know that you, every once in a while, let a little air out of your head so it won't get too big, because you are wonderful. We love you down here in Southern Oregon. Everybody whose head is on straight, I mentioned Bill Meyer, and they're like, oh, yeah. So thanks for being so human, so down to earth, so connected with all of our issues. I mean, you're a jewel.
That is so kind, Carolyn, and thank you very much. I'm going to, you know, poke a little head in the skull, a hole in the skull to let that out, but I appreciate that, all right?
Okay.
Thank you very much. KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Mr. Outdoors, let's get him on and talk about what else is happening here in just a minute. Quarter after 7, Outdoor Report is sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. Mr. Outdoors is here, Greg Roberts. And Greg, you were listening to this band.
Someone's gone you wrong.
You had tickets and you went to Use Your Gift for last night there at the Criterion Theater, and that was Pablo Cruz playing there,
yep.
Right? What'd you think?
Yeah, great show. You know, it's like we were talking off air. It's hard to believe that, you know, the two founding members of the band that are still playing in it, because sadly the other founders have passed away. But, you know, Dave 77, the guitar player, and Corey, the keyboard player, he's 74. And they still play great. They still sound great. They're a bass player, and they do have a lead singer. That is his whole purpose being in the band, Peter. You know, they nail those songs perfectly, and you close your eyes and you're listening to it, and it sounds just exactly like what you just heard and what you've been hearing coming out of the radio since the 1970s.
Glad to hear it, and glad to know that they're still road warriors and taking it out there. Now, by the way, this was on Cool 103.5, our sister station, right down the hall from me here, and this was to help out Sandy Ficca, who, of course, drummer for Firefall, you know, another 1970s band. And he has what's called the Use Your Gift Foundation that helps local kids. When I say kids, I'm talking like high school kids and young adults get record deals and get connected into the music business, which I think is quite an honorable thing that he's been doing, trying to help them out and make sure they get money.
It's a tremendous thing that he's doing, and he's uncovering great talent from right here in Medford. And last night had a young lady from here, Amber Lynn, open up the show that her first original song that she wrote, Sandy almost refused to believe the story she told him, that she said, well, this is like the only song I've ever written, and it was so good. Sandy was like, you know, people write hundreds of songs before they ever come up with anything this good.
Yeah, I could see Sandy saying, oh, come on, you had AI write that. Tell the truth,
yeah,
okay?
No, right. And she nailed it, and she played it, and it is deeply personal. And she talked about the fact she wrote the song to help channel and deal with the emotions and everything she was dealing with from an absent father in her life.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
she took the pain and made something good out of it.
Nashville.
Yeah, okay. So she's taking it to Nashville or recording it in Nashville?
No, she's already been there. In fact, she's been doing recording in the same studio with the same producer that Dolly Parton uses.
No kidding. Wow.
No kidding.
Great story. Well, I'm glad you had a good time there. And great. It's actually a very nice place to hear concerts like that. And out of curiosity, have you checked out the new Holly yet? Have you had the opportunity to go over there? I have not.
No, because when they did Jim Belushi and the Heartbreakers, I was out of town doing one of the sportsman shows. And I was like, oh, man, I would have loved to have seen that, because Jim and his band are really good. And like I said, being out of town, I had to miss it.
Well, the last time I was at the Holly Theater in the inside was in the pre-restoration time, because Art Alfinito Jr. The son of Art Alfonito, who owned the Holly, I was using him as a barber back in the day at that time, and he took me inside there, and I've seen some pictures of it, and to see how sad it was at that point, the roof was open and the birds were, you know, going to the bathroom on everything, and the rain was coming through. Boy, what a change. Just amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty sad, and you know, being a kid growing up here in Medford, I watched a lot of movies in there. I never saw it when they were doing live entertainment performance, vaudeville, basically, if you will, in there. In fact, the last movie I saw in there was Airplane.
Well, what a great movie to see.
Yeah.
To send it off, though.
Yep.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A theater, what's that? Well, it's a place where people go to watch a movie, but that's not important, and you just move along, right?
Yeah. You feel instantly old when you say, I used to go to
Well, my thing, that is one of the, that is a movie that every time it comes up on my cable feeds or something like that, I DVR it, and I still watch it. In fact, I've now saved it. Anytime I'm looking for a stupid, hilarious laugh, I'll rerun it. I know all the lines. I know where the lines are coming. But yet, I'm never tired of that movie. Never.
Yeah, no, they hit it out of the park with that movie. And if you go back, there was an era in the early 70s where they had a whole genre of air disaster movies. They lampoon all of those. They also lampoon the pop culture of what was going on at the time.
Yep.
I mean, Howard Jarvis, who threw California's tax situation on its ear by launching a massive tax revolt, going, this is ridiculous. We're not going to pay this anymore. They even get him in the movie sitting in the taxi cab being abandoned when Robert Hedges goes running off to chase the love of his life, who's a stewardess on the plane.
And, you know, Peter, I think my favorite part, though, was reading about it later about Peter Graves. Peter Graves, of course, who played Captain Over, you know, one of the main stars there.
Yep.
He did not get it, and he was really concerned about the lines as he's going through it at first. And, you know, why am I giving these lines? It's kind of nonsense. And and I think it was either Robert Stack, who was also in the movie, or maybe it was Leslie Nielsen that came up to him. And who would have ever thought Leslie Nielsen would have had such a great comedic career after having played such serious parts? He says, no, you got to understand, Peter, we're the joke. In other words, all these big straight guy leading men, you know, the tough guys, you know, all that. We're the joke. We're here. And it's like you deliver absurd lines completely straight as if there's nothing wrong with saying it, that it's not ridiculous, which made it, of course, 10 times funnier.
Well, and that was Leslie Nielsen who told him that. And then, of course, that launched Leslie Nielsen into the whole Naked Gun police series. That's what kicked that door open.
Yeah, absolutely. Great memories. Hey, thanks for bringing up that about the Holly, watching Airplane of all the movies there. So as far as the weather goes and heading outside, there's not much drama the next few days, right? A whole lot of nothing, really?
It's absolutely beautiful spring weather. We're getting down to highs much closer to what we should be at this time of the year than we were at the beginning of the week. But just, this is, go do whatever you want to do. And, of course, Tuesday, on tax day, this is one thing that's always cracked me up about Oregon. On tax day, they make you mad enough to kill something.
Yeah.
And then Oregon gives you the opportunity because the opening of the turkey season is on tax day.
Wild turkey surprise.
Yeah, wild turkey surprise. So it's definitely time to go get your bird. And with all this lovely weather, the morels are just exploding out everywhere. So you can go out, you can get your turkey for wild turkey surprise, and you can get the morel mushrooms to go along with it.
Now, are wild turkeys considered a pest or an invasive species, or just a normal thing? Because they do a lot of damage in folks' areas and their roof. And
it's a yes and no.
Oh.
Yes, they are a major pest. They are the chief source of wildlife damage complaints to ODF&W here in Central Point. But they are not invasive. They were brought here.
Oh, okay.
ODF&W decided, well, we're going to put wild turkeys into Oregon. And they tried the Rio Grande species. No, not the Rio Grande, because that's what we have currently. I believe they tried Merriam's first. And then they tried, I can't remember the other one they tried. And both of those failed, and they tried them down here. Well, then they decided, well, let's do the Rio Grandes because they seem to be doing well in California. And, yeah, Rio Grandes did well in California, but Oregon was even more ideal for them, and they just exploded first across southern Oregon, and now they're found all over the state. I think, you know, most people know pheasants were brought to the United States in the 1870s and released first here in Oregon in the Willamette Valley, and now we have ringneck pheasants all over the country, especially in the Midwest. But the wild turkey introduction here in Oregon is very much more successful in terms of their numbers and their presence across the state than the pheasants ever were.
What about the taste of wild turkey as contrasted with the standard grocery store butterball, let's say?
Mm.
Huh? What do you think?
Yeah, it was, you know, deep frying turkeys, that began with wild turkeys because they're definitely not the butterball you're going to pick up in the store. They are super lean. There's almost no fat on them, and when you watch them moving across the landscape, you kind of understand why. You know, so from a health point of view, it is way healthier for you to eat a wild turkey than it is to go grab the butter ball at the store. But the flip side of it is, because they are so lean, there is so little fat, most people don't know how to even remotely cook that bird, and they wind up with, well, almost what you see in Christmas Vacation, it would seem, you know.
Oh, a carbonized bird.
Can't even eat.
Okay, got it. So better to fry it, because at least the frying process, you can probably get some needed fat or oil into that then
exactly.
to help it out.
All right. That's why I say deep frying turkeys. I know for a fact it began with people trying to eat wild turkeys. When you do it that way, well, then it works out. Well, we discovered a cheat, though, with the arrival of things like Traegers and slow cookers. It involves a lot of basting, and personally, one of my favorite ways to do that is to save up your bacon grease, and then you use the bacon grease to baste your wild turkey, and you slow cook it, and it turns out absolutely amazing. Or you can go the short route and definitely dunk it in a deep fat fryer and get it into peanut oil, but always be very careful of your oil level.
Oh yeah, and by the way, don't do it on your deck.
And
don't do it on your deck. How many times
yep.
every year you have somebody in an apartment that puts the deep fat fryer up on their wooden
yeah.
deck, and they burn the apartment complex down. Happens every year.
And then
I swear.
What's even worse is then they take the butter balls, which have a ton of fat in them, and they may not get them all the way thawed out.
Yeah.
And then the instant thawing process and the oil starts bubbling, and oh yeah, then you're into disaster with that too. I think I've actually heard of more incidents with deep frying turkeys and starting fires because of butter balls than wild turkeys.
That would make a lot of sense. Hey, Greg, as far as, you know, the next few weeks, are we finally now in real spring and we're not going to be sliding back into the cold stuff any longer?
Yeah, no, real spring is here.
All right. Good to know.
I had said when the groundhog saw his shadow and said 6 more weeks of winter, I said, no, I think out here we're probably going to be end of April, beginning of May before we hit that. Well, we got to that about 2 weeks earlier than I thought we would, but no, we're definitely into spring now.
Okay, very good. Wolf count I saw came out there. What are we looking at here in the state of Oregon? A little over 200, I think. Right?
Yeah, 204 to be exact. The last 3 years when they've released this report, it had been holding steady at 178. And then this year, 15% increase gets us up to 204. The big thing to remember here, that is the minimum confirmed number. That is not supposed to be. We think there's only 204 wolves in the state because there are definitely more than 204. And you get the animal rights groups out there saying, oh, well, there's only 200 wolves, and they're still killing them in Oregon, and killing them is having diarrhea. No,
come on. Hey, Greg, I have to tell you, you've been telling us for years that the wolves were there even before they admitted they were there.
Mm-hmm. And then to further prove it, when I put up the findings of the 2024 Wolf Report, which again was released last week, they have the map showing where they know where all of the wolf packs are at or areas of wolf use. So I took the one they released with the 2024 report, then I put up the exact same map from 2020. And you can see it in black and white. It's indisputable. The wolf population has grown substantially in Oregon, so they're doing just fine. We're not in any danger of losing them. But then you get people who are definitely unhappy that they're here at all, and they say asinine, stupid things like, they're not supposed to be here, they were brought here. Well, no, actually, they've always been here. The lie was we ever got rid of them completely. Mm. And now, oh yeah, we've got much more of them, in part because Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is no longer lying about the fact that they're here.
Okay, that's good to know. Now, I saw a video, and I'm not sure where it came from. I didn't save it. I was busy doing other things last night. But apparently, like a small baby bear was nailed by a bunch of wolves up near Crater Lake. Did you see that video by chance?
Diamond Lake.
Okay.
I busted that as a hoax as soon as I saw it, and now other media are pointing out exactly what I told people following Rogue Weather. Here's what happens when you have a guy who knows wolves, who knows Southern Oregon like the back of his hand, who absolutely knows Highway 138. I took one look at it and knew it was bogus because I first looked at the trees around it.
Oh.
That trees that they're showing, that is definitely not Oregon. I was like, this isn't Oregon. This may be in the Rockies in Canada or the United States. But I was looking at it, and I go, this ain't Oregon. That absolutely is not Highway 138. And I started counting. Ooh, 10 wolves.
That's all right. That's all right. I got a dump button. We're good.
Extremis. We'll put it that way. At this time of the year, wolves in Oregon have broken up. They've moved into their denning areas. They're getting ready to have pups. You are not going to have 10 wolves running in a pack in Oregon at this time of the year.
All right. Well, good to know.
I know things.
I'm glad because I saw that. I said, wow, that looks pretty interesting. I'll have to ask Greg about that. Well, good to know that it's a fake job. So good to know.
Well, Northwest Sportsman Magazine. Mm-hmm. Andy Walgamott saw my post on Rogue Weather. He went and did some digging. While I'm enjoying Pablo Cruz last night, singing along, rocking out, having a good time, my phone's blowing up with people going, that photo is from Yellowstone National Park. It was from Yellowstone National Park.
Okay.
Northwest Sportsman Magazine, by the time I got home on their digital editions, had already put out complete pictures of the entire series of photos from Yellowstone National Park showing these same wolves, and there's nothing in the road. Whatever was in the road, whoever created this whole hoax, Photoshop something in the road and claim the wolves killed a bear on Highway 138.
But you see, that's just it. Nobody, you know, you have to be very careful about what you share and spread around because when it fits your narrative, that's when you need to be most concerned, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And by the way, wolves wouldn't be killing bears at random. If they were going to feed on a bear on a highway, it's because the bear was road killed and they're showing up for the free meal because, as I've been telling this audience for years now too, wolves are scavengers first before they're killers. They will take the easy meal that doesn't require any injury or any energy expenditure from them or no risk of injury. And a dead bear laying on a highway because it got hit? Sure.
Perfect. Yeah. So wild turkey surprise, preferably, that is lying there waiting for them. Okay. Here we go.
I said I could turn wolves into heroes in Oregon in an instant if I could just train them to do nothing but eat wild turkeys.
Oh, you got that right. Greg, have a great weekend. Thanks for the outdoor report, as always, over at rogueweather.com. And heck, we'll go out with a little bit of Pablo Cruz, too, on that matter. We'll catch you next Friday, all right?
You got it, Bill.
RogueWeather.com, outdoor report sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford.
If you don't plan on cooking tonight, plan on
GoodRx is not insurance, but can be used instead of insurance.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
7:36. I'm going to give an email of the day to Brett, who wrote me this morning. And email of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. You don't have dental insurance, that's okay. They'll take care of you. They have a dental plan, which works a lot like insurance, but it has better benefits and better payout and lower costs. I think overall you find out more. And head over to centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Or better yet, just drop by the office, get an appointment there on Freeway Drive, Freeman Way. That's it. Yeah, I've only been there a million times. All right, but yeah. Freeman Way, it's right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant, which is right next door to the McDonald's. So that kind of tells you the neighborhood that it is in. Earlier this morning, when I first came on, I was talking about the order of love, the order of love in the Catholic Church. And this was something that Sean Ring was writing about in dailyreckoning.com, you know, the money guy. And that the challenges that we have been facing these days are because people have a distorted view of love, you know, like the order of priority. Order of priority, of course, loving God first, and then your family and kin, then your community, and then as far as the stranger and the greater world is in last place, right? But everything about globalism and everything about most of our state and a lot of our local government and county and what's going on with the federal government has been about loving the stranger, loving the outsider more than loving our own people. And it's more than just illegal aliens. It's just all sorts of things. And you know, whoever is the odd person out is supposed to get first priority over everything. You have Chris Van Hollen, you know, going over and it is most important to go to the MS-13 alleged gangbanger and talk with him in El Salvador than actually taking care of the people in Maryland, as an example, who are more of his family. It just astounds me, the distortion of this. And Brett writes me, Bill, this is pretty in-depth. St. Thomas is a doctor of the church, and although his teachings and guidance are extensive, he is still in the church's guidance on mental health within the spiritual aspects. To be brief, the disorder of the mind, which limits the disordered love that you spoke of, is when decisions and actions are not based on the intellect and the will, but on emotions. He states that when people are only living by their emotions, which are driven by their memories, their imagination, appetites of the flesh, and our desire for the self-preservation, this is disordered. The devil lies in those areas and drives them to absurdity, which we can clearly see in our country. Boys can be girls. We call it common sense, but when the devil can stir up a memory to get us to live in that despair, living by the flesh, then we don't make decisions based on our intellect, which does know the truth. Sin darkens the intellect so people can't think clearly, which we can see, and therefore we can't see the truth due to the sins. Sin makes you stupid. Have a blessed Easter. Thank you very much. Brett, I appreciate that, and thanks so much. Email today. Pretty good stuff there. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Oregon E-Deals has unbeatable offers for you. Grab a $25 gift certificate to Artisan Bakery for only $18, perfect for fresh European-style pastries, or get a $25 Malello Coffee Roasters gift certificate, also just $15, for your coffee fix. Looking for some self-care? Get a $30 Skin Esteem certificate for only $10. Visit OregonEDeals.com and click the Metford link to score these deals.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here is what's going on.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
7:45. Appreciate you waking up this morning, this good Friday morning. And we were talking about the order of love in which it's important that we prioritize who gets help, and especially when it comes to charity and issues. And there has been a forcing of charity on the homeless situation here in Southern Oregon. I don't want to make too fine of a point about it, but we've had a lot of disorder when it comes to the homeless crisis. A lot of it brought on by the legal system, I would dare say. But there are some people that are looking to help the homeless crisis again. And we spoke with them a few days ago, but I wanted to give them another bite because a big meeting, their big community meeting is coming up on this coming Monday here. And they want to not just helping the homeless, but actually getting some accountability into the situation so that maybe their lives actually improve and they become more productive people, happier people, ultimately. And I think that would benefit the community rather than just forcing charity and putting up tent cities everywhere. And rejoining the show is Julie Thomas, who is the president of PATH Partners Assisting the Homeless, and Jeremy Ford, U-Turn for Christ. And Julie, welcome. Good to have you back. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you for having us back, Bill.
And Jeremy, you're hanging out there, too? You're on the phone, right?
Good morning, Bill.
Okay, good. So Monday, you're going to have this big community meeting, and there was a change of venue, so we wanted to make sure and do that first. And where is this this meeting going to be happening? I know it's about 4 to 6 p.m. on Monday, but where?
Very close. It's actually going to be Monday, 5 to 7 p.m.
5 to 7, okay.
Yeah, thank you. And we did have to change the venue because we needed additional technological resources. So we've moved it to Calvary Chapel in Grants Pass. And the address is 269 West Harbeck Road. And it's 5 to 7. We know it's dinner time. This is the best time to be able to pull it together. So we will be providing refreshments.
Okay. And Jeremy, if you don't mind asking here, what makes the pathway to stability that you are both promoting and have joined forces on to do, what makes this different from the standard approach of, well, the city has to put up big campgrounds and, you know, that's just all there is to it. Otherwise, you're in trouble with the courts and the disability groups, et cetera, et cetera. What will make Pathway to Stability a different process? Can you explain that?
Yeah, so what we're looking to do is we're looking to do a treatment-first model. So when the individual comes in, we get them stable, and then we provide a pathway out of homelessness. And we realize that a lot of the homeless issues due to addiction and mental health issues. So we want to be able to provide resources for them to get out of their addictions. If they have mental health issues, we want to be able to provide them with resources to deal with their mental health issues. And then, you know, what we're looking to do is once we get them stable, once we get them into treatment and then putting them into workforce development, job placement training, and then being able to provide the community with another workforce to help the community grow. And with one of the things we're kind of hoping to do is that once they transition out of homelessness and they go through workforce development and addiction treatment, is that they'll be able to contribute back to the community. Instead of being a pull on the resources of the community, they'll actually be going to work, or, you know, hopefully we'll get a few that have turned into business owners and actually be able to pay taxes and, you know, help foster the community growth and build a community instead of, you know, being a burden to the taxpayers.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. You know, Julie, it sounds like this is about actually restoring lives, really, not just doing the traditional handout and, well, here's a place for you to pitch your tent. That'd be a fair way of looking at this right now?
Absolutely, no question about it. And it's really a long-term solution. Our community has really been plagued for the last 5+ years, like you said, because of the courts and some legislation that came down that wasn't helpful. Mm-hmm. But this is really about coming up with long-term solutions, not just finding a place, like you said, for somebody to pitch a tent, but to take all the really good work that's already being done in our community and take it to the next level. So we have great organizations that are getting people into treatment, people getting into housing, getting mental health, helping them with job placement. The problem is that in many cases, somebody will finally be able to get into treatment. They come out and there's no housing, or they have a barrier to go into treatment because they have a pet, or they have a barrier to treatment because there's a 3 to 4 month waiting list. So what we did is we identified all the remaining gaps in services and the remaining gaps that are preventing us from really reducing and both ultimately eradicating our homeless issues and addiction issues. We don't want to manage them. We want to eradicate them. The Pathways to Stability will bridge that gap between a low barrier entry where somebody can go in, they might get a hot meal, a place to use the restroom, maybe lay their head.
Yeah, that would be like the Mint program in Grants Pass, right? The Mint
Correct.
Folks. All right.
They're doing something now that nobody else has done, and we haven't had low barrier before. And it's a step. It's a step up. It's a place for people to get out of the tent, out of the element, into a safer environment. But to transition and navigate people from there, there's limited resources. There has to be a bed for them. There has to be housing for them. There has to be treatment. There has to be job placement. So this is a place where those who are ready, who are going to Mint and are ready, they can step out of that situation, step closer to being stable, step closer to being self-sufficient. The Pathways to Stability not only has access to the local nonprofits who are doing really great sustainable work, but it has a housing component, a transitional housing. So if it's a single mom that's just trying to get first and last month rent.
Yeah, and you don't want to just throw them in with the general, with like a drug addicted population, as an example. You wouldn't want to put the kids in that. I get that. I understand this. Is there a model where this has been successful before? Pathway to Stability is actually it's sort of a national program. Am I right about that or not?
Yeah, Jeremy, if you want to talk on that, and I'll fill in any blanks.
Okay, go ahead.
Jeremy's the one that found this really successful program that we're modeling off of.
So what we did is we started looking at different models that we're working around the United States and the different cities. And what we came across was one called Built for Zero. And Built for Zero was an initiative that's worked, it's implementing in 104 other cities, cities like Kern County, Bakersfield, Gulfport, mm-hmm. Mississippi, Rockford, Illinois, different cities have reached Function Zero, which is where homelessness is brief zero and not occurring anymore. But one of the things that we realized with Built for Zero model is it was a housing first model, not a treatment first model. And on the back end of that, a lot of people were falling back into homelessness.
Yeah, and housing first, unfortunately, we found this out. That was an Obama administration plan. And we found out that that common sense kicked in. You're saying, okay, housing first, but if you're still addicted and in real, real bad personal shape, you're probably not going to keep your house in good shape, and you'll probably lose that, right?
That's right.
Right. That's what we saw. There was, there was instances where the homes were being turned into trap houses and other things like that.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's not going to work. And so here at U-Turn for Christ, we have a treatment-first model here, and it works, and it's been working for over 30 years. We've gone from one U-Turn for Christ for, like I said, almost 30 now before in overseas in the United States. And so we kind of want to implement, we're kind of taking the best things out of a lot of different models that we've seen and trying to put it together for one. And we're kind of morphing it and making it where it's feasible here for Grants Pass, and realizing that most of this is probably an addiction and mental health issue, that we want to kind of tackle it from a treatment first model. One of the words we were kind of looking at was rehabilitation, but we don't like that word because rehabilitation just kind of means bringing you back to where you were. We were looking for transformation. We want to transform lives through this, where they can come in homeless, get them off their addictions, and then, like I said, eventually put them in workforce development and job placement.
Okay. I don't think there's anybody listening that would actually disagree with this because, you got to meet someone where they are right now, but you also have to get them out of that particular malady that got them there in the first place.
Right.
So anyway, Pathway to Stability community meeting, it's going to be this coming Monday, 5 till 7 o'clock. And once again, 269 West Harbeck Road in Grants Pass is where this is. And what's the church or the religious institution where this is going to be?
That's Calvary Chapel, Grants Pass.
Calvary Chapel. Okay, Calvary Chapel in Grants Pass. Julie, Jeremy, I appreciate you both coming on and talking about it. All the best. And this is going to be an explanation kind of thing, or you're looking for volunteers. What is the purpose of the meeting, 5 till 7?
Well, we're working on the agenda now, so people who attend will be able to hear from some of the local nonprofits that are coming up with sustainable solutions.
And you can ask questions. Ask questions, things like that. Okay.
Exactly. And then they'll be able to hear from city officials and other people that are supporting the event. They'll be able to ask questions. They'll be able to interact with those who will participate in this. They'll hear some testimonials about what's working, and they'll hear where we've come from and where we are today and where we're going.
Julie Thomas.
It will be a great recruitment for volunteers because it's a community-wide need, for sure.
All right, very good. Julie Thomas and Jeremy Ford, thank you for coming on the show. Good luck on Monday, okay?
Thank you.
755 KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Joel here at Brother.